Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Drolene Ma, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Good and you. I was just going to say, I cannot make hide nor rubber out of any kind of sports question.
Yeah, and so say some of us. Absolutely. That's why I've got to double check the answer always, because I have no, you know, it's like muscle memory. I've got none when it comes to sport and sport knowledge. I don't retain any information. It's quite a weird thing that. But there you have it. Yesterday was Yom HaTzmaut. Did you have a wonderful day?
It was great. And there was really a sense that normality is starting to return to the country. We engaged in some of our favorite pastimes, eating, of course. I mean, this is Israel, and nothing says we love you, Israel, better than a big barbecue, or ala ash, as we call it here. But also return to the beaches, return to the forests, return to the parks. And of course, return to my favorite thing, which is the annual matas, the annual flyover of choppers and planes. And, you know, I do loves me a lovely jet, Howard, flying over the country. So really a feeling that, at least at 73, we are returning to normality, coming out of this very, very difficult, past year.
And it is amazing to see. Absolutely incredible. As I see that there's an announcement as well that from Sunday, which basically means effective immediately, I would imagine, you don't need to wear masks outdoors.
Yes, this has been cleared by the health ministry. You know, there were rumors that they would be debating whether or not we would have to wear masks outside. And for the last couple of weeks, it has been a case of, you know, have your mask with you. The police aren't going to fine you if you aren't wearing your mask. But as of Sunday, it is official now, because of the number of infections has reduced dramatically, as have the numbers of serious cases, and that vaccine continues to be rolled out. Schools are returning to normal on Sunday without being in pods. But from Sunday, you can be outside without your face mask. However, you do still have to have it with you, because if you enter into a store or restaurant or whatever, you have to put your mask on.
Right. Okay. So life is getting back to normal, and that must be absolutely tremendous, and in good time, especially as Israel heads into the summer. Very difficult. I remember last year discussing this with you, how hard it was for people to wear masks outdoors in the incredible heat.
Well, absolutely. And we know here the temperatures can get extremely hot. In fact, we're bracing for temperatures as high as 39 Monday and Tuesday. You know, the summer coming in with a bang, but all good. Unfortunately, last night, as we were ending our Yom HaTzmaut, we also had rockets fired from Gaza into southern Israel near the areas of Sderot, Idim, near Am. Those areas very close to the border with Gaza, falling in empty fields, thank goodness, and the IAF have struck targets in Gaza in response.
So, of course, Hamas not letting a good opportunity go to waste, I imagine.
Unfortunately, this is how they see Israel's existence, which to me speaks more about themselves than it does us. Quite magnificent yesterday was the fact that for the first time in our history, at the president's gathering for envoys from around the world, we had representation from the ambassador from the UAE, and also a delegation from Morocco, for the first time in 73 years. So a real turning point in our history. Unfortunately, we still have those elements on our borders that rather would seek our destruction than would sit down at a table and negotiate.
Well, speaking of which, Gimple's asking a question. He says, I much prefer a BBQ to the BBC. Can you ask Rolene about the BBC's joke about Israel and not vaccinating its Arab population? Isn't this a blood libel?
Well, you know what? I think we need to take the word joke out of it, because there's nothing funny about the BBC trying to make any jokes about this at all, especially since they've been heavily castigated for untruthfully reporting that we had not vaccinated our Arab population. In fact, they had to retract that and admit a couple of weeks ago that they did get the information wrong. So why visit there? And I must be honest, Gimple, I don't hold the BBC in any kind of esteem at the moment, given the preposterous way they are looking for fault with everything. I mean, just ask Idris Elba, apparently.
Yeah, so tell us about Idris Elba. No, well, we can't really. It's not on the Israel report. But, yeah, it's just bizarre. We do probably need to talk about that at some point. What I do want to ask you about is we know that Prince Philip passed away. His funeral is taking place over the weekend. He was a tremendous friend to Israel, wasn't he?
Well, isn't this extraordinary? The things that you find out about people, especially world figures, when they pass away. I only really learnt about this when I sat down to write an article this week on Prince Philip, which I thought would just be about, you know, his visit here as the first member of the royal family to visit Israel. You know, the extraordinary history of his mother, who saved the Cohen family in Greece during the Holocaust, and who was subsequently honored at Yad Vashem as a righteous amongst the nation. And he came out here to receive that award on her behalf. And while he was here, he met with the Jewish veterans who had served in His Majesty's armies during the Second World War. But I didn't know that his ties with Israel and with Jews ran that much more deeper. In fact, I found it quite fascinating last Friday when the news was broke that with immediate response, in fact, before any of the former U.S. presidents and President Biden responded, our president, Reuven Rivlin, responded, talking about this incredible tie that he has to our country. Prime Minister Netanyahu responded with immediate effect, lauding his incredible duty over the course of his life. We also have the spokesperson, very unusual, from our foreign ministry, Lior Hayat, also responding. I haven't seen any other foreign ministers, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, responding to that, as well as our ambassador to the United Kingdom, Tsipi Hotovelli, with immediate effect they responded. So, of course, you know, me being a curious person, I had to do a little bit more digging. And he's had a great interest in religion and politics, even though the royal family has to be politically neutral. But I didn't know that he had formed, along with the World Wildlife Fund, a interfaith protectorate over the environment, but also that he had spoken on numerous occasions for organizations like the Jewish National Fund, the JNF, and various other Zionist organizations. And when he was told, you know, this probably wasn't the appropriate thing to do by critics of Israel, he had some very salty language for them, you know, which he was quite famous for. But he apparently enjoyed a lot of conversations with Jewish religious leaders, the late Lord Chief Rabbi Sacks being one of them, Ephraim Mervis, the current rabbi, being another. He liked and respected Jews very much. In fact, his teacher at Gordonston was Jewish, Mr. Hahn, and he credits Gordonston with really helping him come into his own. There's the story I know you spoke about the other day with Lady Colin Campbell about protecting the Jewish student who had his head shaved and he gave him his cricket cap so that he wasn't embarrassed. But also, which I didn't know, was that in 1982, Israeli schools adopted the Duke of Edinburgh Awards.
Really? Which I had encourages. This is so interesting.
And you know what? I was quite ashamed of myself because
being a royalist.
Not only as a royalist, but as a member of WEET, so we rolled it out in, you know, all our schools.
Oh wow!
Many Israeli schools have adopted the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, which is you have to do service, you have to do a sport, and you have to do something outdoorsy, and thousands of graduates of this have said, you know, we credit the Duke of Edinburgh for saving our lives, that, you know, we saw something in ourselves which didn't lead us going into prison, you know, we've discovered that we could live a better life. So it's really quite astounding his history, and of course his historic visits to Bergen-Belsen with Her Majesty the Queen, very, very moved by it, and something which he's passed on to Prince Charles, who's the patron of many Jewish charities, and the Holocaust Memorial Trust in England, and to his grandson and granddaughter-in-law, Prince William, and his wife, Catherine, who've dedicated themselves, especially Catherine, to Holocaust education, and they credit him very much with passing on this legacy. So an extraordinary tie to Jews and to Israel.
And of course, his mother buried in Israel. Why was she buried in Israel?
It was her dying wish that she be buried in Jerusalem, in the Mount of Olives. There are wonderful pictures of Prince Philip planting a tree at Yad Vashem. As you know, it's a great honor here in Israel, amongst the righteous of the nations, or anywhere, you know, planting trees is something very precious to us as a part of our reforestation. But also we've seen throughout the years, not that he was the first royal to visit the country, but followed by Prince Edward, Prince Charles, and Prince William. I mean, Prince William came here to an absolute rock star reception, or Prince William, as he's known here in Israel. You know, many people over the years have thought, why hasn't the Queen come to visit? A lot of conjecture is it because nobody's wanted to anger, you know, Arab royalty? Is it the Foreign Office? Have they not prepared that? Is it maybe some kind of boycott by the royal family? But no, it wasn't. And in 1994, the Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, was the first royal to visit this country.
Absolutely incredible. And we do have to talk about the hearse, even though it's got nothing to do with Israel, but I just think it's the most amazing thing, how he's going to be buried. What do you think about that?
I think it's extraordinary. First of all, that he was so meticulous in his planning for his funeral.
So anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, a Land Rover hearse that Philip designed himself, an open-top Defender TD5130, was custom-built to Duke's orders at manufacturers for over a 16-year project, including a new coat of military green paint. So he's got this Land Rover Defender chassis cab. I mean, they started working on it in 2003 for his funeral, and
I
that's
think
the
it's
hearse.
Extraordinary.
I think it's amazing.
And as he said, apparently to the Queen, just stick me on the back of a Land Rover.
And what I find incredible as well is he managed to navigate these worlds, a world that I would imagine, not I would imagine we've seen, is very stuffy, very controlled, and yet he somehow retained his own personality the whole way through his life while being supportive of the Queen without bringing any shame, disrepute on her. And yes, of course, there were many salty things, as you said, that he said. Some were less appropriate than others, but somehow he just he was accepted for who he was.
Well, I think the lesson in this is, first of all, he tried to make light of all the formality by making these wonderful salty comments, but also that he's one of the last of a great generation that believed in get on with it. Mm. You know, no looking for fault with everybody, no complaining, no feeling sorry for himself. And he had a really difficult life.
Mm,
and he managed to have this private life, live a life of service. And you see from the very young to his generation coming out in their droves to pay tribute. And I think it's a lesson for our generation. You know, sometimes, you know, quit the whining and just, you know, remember that we can all have a bigger life that makes an impact. And look at us here talking on the Israel report of the tremendous impact that he had here in Israel and for Jews around the world that we've only found out now after his death.
And before I let you go, a couple of people asking what happened with Idris Elba. I know it's got nothing to do with the Israel report, but tell us quickly, Roland.
to me, I just cannot wrap my head around it. I find it so appallingly insulting to Idris Elba, but apparently the BBC have decided that his character, Luther, is not black enough.
Exactly. BBC Diversity Chief Miranda Wayland has stirred up controversy on social media due to a discussion in which she said Idris Elba's popular crime series Luther is not authentic when it comes to black storytelling. So there you have it. She says, as Wayland explained, when Luther first came out, everybody loved the fact that Idris Elba was there, really strong black character lead. We fell in love with him. Who didn't, right? But after you got into about the second series, you got kind of like, okay, he doesn't have any black friends. He doesn't eat any Caribbean foods. This doesn't feel authentic. Oh, and with that, we bring ourselves to a wall where we smash our heads against it because, wow, it doesn't get stupider than that. Rolene Marks, have a fantastic weekend. Have a Shabbat Shalom. We'll catch you next week.